So here's the million-dollar question. How are men like us who work hard, have good motives, and a God-given purpose supposed to fulfill the calling on our lives and the dreams in our hearts, all while establishing sexual integrity, thriving relationships, and a meaningful connection with God? That is the question, and this podcast will give you the answers. My name is Sathya Sam. Welcome to Unleash the Man Within. All right. Well, hey, what's up, everybody? It's Sathya Sam here. I'm here with Sean Bonito. Welcome to Unleash the Man Within. We're so glad that you guys are here tuning in today. Sean and I are going to get into it a little bit, and then we're going to answer your guys' questions. Super excited to jump in. Sean, yes, and I are before we hit record, we were talking a little bit about the difference between counting streaks and tracking trends and how big of a difference this can make in recovery. I would say this can be make or break. And so I will just say, if you're in recovery, you need to stop counting streaks. That's just end the nonsense right now. Nobody cares about your streak. And there's better ways. You can still track data without counting streaks, but you can actually track it in a way that's going to be way more valuable and way more helpful for you in your recovery.
Yeah, it's a big topic. There's lots of programs out there and systems out there that really promote it. And I think you and I are just time and time again seeing that the results just aren't lasting. Guys might have that hype 3-6 months of sobriety, maybe even a year, but it sucks when guys are investing that kind of time and energy and they're finding hope in something, then it crumbles. So it's a passionate topic for me too.
Yeah, the counting streaks thing is sort of like the yo-yo dieting of the fitness industry. We've talked about that before, where you see these amazing transformations of somebody who's lost 50 pounds, they've lost 100 pounds, and that is impressive. Like, even somebody who does have a streak, like, we don't want to dismiss the work and the energy that was required to reach that point. That is actually worth celebrating. However, where are you at a year from now, 2 years from now? Are you keeping the weight off? Is the streak still alive? And I think what happens, and it's very true of yo-yo dieting. It's a great metaphor. If your goal is to lose 100 pounds and you're 200 pounds overweight, you can do a lot of different things. You can run. You can starve yourself. You could over-exercise. You could do so many things that are actually really bad for you, and you'll still get the result. Yeah. And in recovery, when streak counting is your priority and you're trying to hit that 90-day mark or you're trying to hit that 6-month mark, when that becomes the goal, you can actually, like, humans are incredibly resilient and we can put our nose to the ground and do something for 3 months. It doesn't mean that we're transformed, right? It doesn't mean that we're actually healthy or whole. And I think that's the whole issue with the streak counting thing. And that's why I say nobody cares about your streak, because what we're actually much more concerned with is your heart. Is your heart actually progressing? Are you being transformed, made into the likeness of Christ? Are you progressing? You know, and we'd rather measure that internally first than externally.
Yeah, man. We have a beautiful new friend here in Czech, and she has the last few years like got down to the point with anorexia that she should have died. And we just kind of looked at her, like, when we were here 7-8 months ago, and she's progressively been getting better. But when we first met her, just like a month ago, I think it was, Lon and I were saying, there's a lot of people that actually look like that when you think they're healthy and they're dieting and their fitness is going on off the roof, but you realize that they're starving themselves and they're not healthy. Like, we actually give accolades to people that are not well.
Yeah.
It's really scary.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's kind of the society we're in, right? That's so externally driven. That's been going on for a long time, like with the American dream and, you know, all that kind of stuff. But now social media makes it brutal. Yeah. I know my wife and I have some conversations about that sometimes, because she's like, man, I don't know how some of these moms do it. And I'm like, actually, they may not be doing it. You know, they're doing it for 60 seconds in a reel. So,
that's right.
You know, I wouldn't be beating yourself up about it too badly. But the external measures are, they do have their place. You know, like, I'm a high achiever, so I love the external measures and I love the accomplishments, and I'm actually all about it. It's just, I never want to be the guy who just has the accomplishment and then a year later they're like, oh yeah, but you know, he lost it all, or he put back all the weight on, or yeah, but he relapsed again. You know, it's that longevity, that's as kingdom as it gets, right? Is affecting change long term. Because we're playing an eternal game here. So Jesus is the long game master, you know, like they got this thing all figured out, and anything that lasts longer is going to be more valuable. So maybe we'll get into the nuts and bolts a little bit, just so that people understand what we mean. And we had a client, this is the best, it's the best way I can think to demonstrate this. We had a client who came to us, he was watching pornography every day. So he is having 30 relapses per month. And in his first month with us, that number went from 30 to 23. Ooh, 23 relapses in 1 month, you know. People would be asking for refunds at that point. You know, this guy, this Sathya guy doesn't know what he's talking about. It's a scam. Like, you know, because that's not a sexy result. That's like you went only 7 days in a month without watching pornography. And those, they weren't even seven consecutive days.
Yeah.
But if we're tracking trends, what we could actually see is, hey, this is going in the right direction. It's went from 30 to 23. And we're not trying to justify sin. We're not trying to enable his bad behavior, but we're trying to say, actually, this is a good indicator of progress. And there's still work to be done, but we can celebrate what's going on here, even though maybe it wasn't the best month. His second month with us, the number went down to 18. Third month went down to 8. Month 4 was 5. And by month 6, he was at 0.
Yeah.
So this guy, and I actually remember he posted in the community in month 4. And so what was so cool is in month 4, he had 5 slips. So he didn't wait to post until everything was perfectly figured out. And I just thought that was so amazing. I was like, this guy gets it. This guy really, really gets it. But he was like, hey guys, just wanted to share an update on my progress. And he showed like month 1, 2, 3, 4. And he kind of showed how he's been going along the way. And it was all very clear. If you went from 30 to 23 to 18 to 8 to 5, like what is going to happen eventually? So if that trend continues in the right direction, by month 6, 8, 12, it's going to be 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0. And the really cool thing about tracking trends is, number one, it reframes everything, because that's everything. Like if you can't keep hope going, and if you can't keep yourself encouraged through this process, you're just not going to make it through. Like the temptations just get too strong. It's a really difficult addiction to quit that way. So having a way to track your progress that actually fosters encouragement is really valuable. The second thing is, he didn't actually really look at his results from a monthly perspective until he was at month 3 or month 4. And we constantly told him, don't worry too much about the numbers. Like if you want to do your calculation every once in a while, that's fine. But let's focus on the inner child work. Let's focus on healing of the heart, building emotional fitness. Let's focus on cultivating that self-awareness. Let's talk about your identity. Let's build that relationship with Jesus. Get you plugged into your community. Like, there's lots of different things that we're taking care of here that are much more inner. And then we know this is kind of like a lag measure. Like as a result, that number starts to dwindle. So I just think the street counting gets you very zoomed in on a kind of a microscopic part of the journey, whereas tracking trends really keeps perspective. So it's actually more accurate anyway. But number two, it's also much more likely to foster those results.
Yeah, that's exciting. It's not just a concept, but some great evidence. We've seen that time and time again. And that's what's so valuable about it, where we see the evidence of counting streaks just proving to not be that long-lasting freedom we want guys to have. And counting trends, I think, is something that maybe people haven't really thought of. That concept is common with investments and money, but looking at it with recovery, what a great opportunity for somebody to really have hope through the journey. And I even think about, like, you know, I've journaled like 180 days in a row, and like, you know, that would be a streak, but it's been interesting because I don't count the days where I get like so sick that I've been a few times where I've been so sick I've been sleeping all day. It's not like that day ends, I didn't journal, I'm like, oh, everything's falling apart. It's like,
yeah,
it's become such a habit where I'm praying in a way of journaling. I'm talking to my wife as if I'm journaling, the daily habit of journaling. There's been just profound things that happen 3-4 times a week because of that habit. But if we're just counting streaks, it's like, yeah, I journaled, let's get to tomorrow. Yeah. That's just never going to be a useful thing to do. So I think counting trends, tracking trends is fantastic. And I get guys often saying that that concept has been just that paradigm shift that they needed.
Yeah. Yeah. Agreed, man. Agreed. Now, speaking of fitness, we were talking about kind of a health metaphor earlier. You're looking fit, bro. Are you, what are you doing these days? You're looking really good.
Two kids, man, holding one baby and you lifting a 3-year-old.
Yeah, you're just like doing isometrics all day, right?
Oh, man. Yeah. I was doing, I was just really simply doing 50 to 70 push-ups a day for a while there. Then I did get sick and hurt my wrist for a little bit there. But it's amazing how something so simple, even looking at this, like the reality of just simple things built up. I think I did 50 push-ups every day for like 30 days straight. And I was blown away at how that had results. And it was cool because it began to it wasn't just this thing I was doing. I, like we always know, would begin to feel different. I would deep breathe when I was doing push-ups. I would, you know, journal about it and know like what God's speaking to me as I'm doing fitness and things like that. So it just became very holistic. Cool. And that's just been such a incredible thing for me, man. Like, yeah. Small, simple things like 50 push-ups a day or whatever it is. And in this challenging season, like that's what's gotten me through. So there's been those trends in my own life too, man. So yeah, thanks for the compliment, man. I'll take it.
Yeah. Yeah. Good for you. That's cool. Okay. So 50 push-ups, are you doing that all in one go? Are you spreading it out throughout the day?
That would usually be two sets.
Two sets. Okay. Two sets of 25. That's solid, man.
Yeah.
I was just reading, there's a guy, he's like a very famous bodybuilder. Somebody was telling me about it and I was looking at some of his stuff. And he had like one of the first, I should see if I can pull it up, but he had like one of the first ebooks as a lead magnet. Yeah. Like back in like 96 or 97. So this thing's got like ugly colors and all that kind of stuff. But like he was kind of a marketing genius. He was just way ahead of his time before funnels and lead magnets and all that kind of stuff. But anyway, he talked about how he had kind of like reached this peak in, you know, sculpting his physique and physical fitness and whatever. And the one thing he did is he would pick an exercise and he would do it every hour, 12 times a day. And like just one set. So like you're not trying to exhaust the muscles or anything. But I just thought it was kind of interesting about, you know, just about like just doing a little bit, a lot of a little bit, and how much like as it compounds over time, what that can lead to. So anyway, you should keep up what you're doing with the push-ups, man. You look good.
Thanks, man. Yeah, we're getting into woodcutting season. So that always gives me the big Hulk shoulders. So that's good.
What woodcutting season? What are you talking about?
Yeah, I don't know if you remember last year when we moved here, it was like woodcutting season where our my wife's dad gets the big logs brought into our land, and then I just hack at them. So we basically take full on like trees and turn them into burnable wood. So it's awesome workout. It's very rewarding. So that season's coming out. Helen, I was just telling me this morning, you know, it's getting good enough outside to start cutting some wood. I'm like, I need that. That's perfect.
That's so funny. Oh, man. Well, so a bunch of people on our team all went to the same ministry school as me, and they have this thing called Anger Day. So they do this big talk about anger, and it's funny because this school ends up with a lot of people like me who are very suppressed. And especially amongst Christians, anger is one of those emotions that you're kind of expected to just like keep at bay, which is, you know, not even really biblical. Like it says that God is rich in love and slow to anger. So, you know, definitely don't want to be, you know, short fuses, but there's room for anger. So anyways, part of Anger Day is giving people, it can be a little bit intense, but like basically giving people an open space to express their anger. And there's like kind of loud music so that if people do yell and shout, they don't stand out and whatever. Like it's kind of an intense environment and it does not work for everybody. Like some people were just like, this is like traumatizing for me. Like everybody's mad and I need to get out of here. So it's not the best thing in the world, but there's some merit to at least giving people an avenue to express anger.
That's funny.
So I was just, as you're talking about, I'm like, man, that would be a cool way to get your anger out. Cause that's like, that's actually productive, but then it's physical. And I just feel like, you know, for a dude, we need that kind of stuff, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I was a very angry child. So one of my dreams was to have a room that was just like a nonstop stock of like glass that I could just go in and smash.
Oh my gosh.
I literally like dreamt of having a glass room that I could just smash things. So that's changed. Yeah. So that's good. It changed when I saw the drums. The drums became my outlet of anger.
There you
go.
A little bit healthier. Yeah,
we need something. And then I made some holes in my family's walls at home and stuff, but it was better than breaking glass all the time. So
that's hilarious.
Oh, man, seriously.
Yeah. Are you playing drums at your church? Have you started doing
now
that
I did my driver's license? It's now available. So
okay.
We're just getting out of the newborn season and finding those rhythms, but I'm itching to drum hopefully in the next 2 months or so. It'd be nice to get back to it.
Oh, that's cool, man. That's cool. Does your church live stream? I feel like I might tune in and see.
That's a good question, man. I will figure that out because my parents would love to see it too, of course.
Yeah. Oh, for sure.
Yeah. We're going to dedicate Lydia soon. So that'll be obviously, so we want to figure out all those live streaming things. So yeah, absolutely.
There you go. So do you have a kit at home? Like, are you still practicing
every
once in a while?
No, I don't. It's been a while, man.
That's tough.
My hope is that I can actually get a drum kit as my background here.
Oh, that'd be cool. Yeah, there you go.
That'd be pretty cool. No, I really want one. So all in good time, as you know. When you got newborn, the priorities shift a bit, but with my limited language in Czech, it'll be a nice way for me to speak to people through music. So I am excited about that.
Yeah, man, I'm missing my keyboard right now because I've been in Jamaica for 10 weeks, I think. This is week 10. And my brother-in-law has a guitar here, so I at least have some little outlet. Because I'm that guy, like I will sit down and I'll put Seinfeld on TV and then I'll like do scales while I watch Seinfeld. Like I'm that guy.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah. Work on the bass line. Yeah. Yeah, seriously. So anyways, I always have at least some kind of musical outlet here. And I'm so fidgety. I'm such a fidgety person that I think part of the reason it just helps me get my fidget energy out. It drives my wife crazy. Cause we'll be like cuddling and I'm just like, you know, like tapping my fingers on her or something like that. And she's like, what are you doing? She's like, it ruins the moment. So anyways, it gives me those outlets, but I miss the keyboard. I miss my piano. Yep. So I'm excited to go back and play a little bit. And for those of you who are keyboard players, I own a Nord. So I call it a keyboard, but I feel like it's misleading, but it's also, it's not quite a piano. So, you know, I don't know. I miss my Nord. We'll put it that way.
That's funny, man. Sounds like we both have a bit of Kramer in us, man. A little fidgety.
I know. I think I have more Kramer in me than I'd care to admit. Yeah.
Best show ever.
Oh, seriously. I was getting into it with someone the other day because Seinfeld is actually my favorite show of all time. Like I'm a big sitcom guy, and there's been lots of good sitcoms over the years, but I don't know. I can go to Seinfeld pretty much any day and watch it. But I love how polarizing it is. Like I remember hearing I think it was Lecrae. I was hearing Lecrae in an interview one time, and he was like, he was basically talking about how because of his upbringing and obviously Black culture, he's gotten a lot of opportunities globally, which means he's not always going into more Black environments. And he's like, sometimes I'm just talking with white pastors and I just don't know what to say. Cause you know, he's like, I'm just not going to be that guy who watches Seinfeld. Like, I just don't get it. And I remember hearing that. I'm like, what? How do you not get Seinfeld? That show is genius, man. But it's like, you know, there's such a cultural piece to it. And, the humor is a little bit, it's a bit off kilter. I'll give you that. So,
no doubt. Yeah, I definitely had a season where I did not watch Seinfeld. I felt pretty convicted not to. And just recently we started kind of handpicking which episodes we might watch again.
Yeah, I know. And again, like if you look at the sitcoms that come out today, Seinfeld is actually pretty good. They're pretty clean.
Yeah.
And like
one
of their most viral episode, I think, was The Contest, right? Which is all about masturbation, but they don't actually say it. You know, there was some brilliance there, but I like the tact of it. Like you have to be careful, obviously, because sometimes the implications are darker than they're coming across.
That's right.
But
that's right.
They were really tactful about it. I appreciated that.
Yeah. I agree completely. Yeah, it was definitely a part of my childhood, so it's hard to get rid of it because it's always there.
Yeah, I know. Although, anyway, we need to get into some questions. But I'm actually completely off sitcoms right now. I'm not watching any TV shows. I came back from this last business mastermind retreat with a conviction. Like, I don't even watch that much TV. Like, maybe 3 or 4 hours a week. Not a lot. And that would include like a movie with my wife in there and all that kind of stuff. But I came back just realizing like, I think I'm actually watching TV for the wrong reasons. Like I think I'm numbing out a little bit when I watch it. And I really don't like that. So I'm actually, anyways, I probably shouldn't have even gone on Seinfeld because I'm going to be thinking about it all day now. But yeah, but it's actually been, it's been kind of interesting going without TV. I'll have to get into it in another episode.
Yeah,
maybe.
I'd love to talk more about that, man.
Yeah. Yeah. No, sorry, not without TV, but with less. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. Let's do some. All right, Oscar, lead us into the promised land, bro.
Question one is from Tim in Lakeland. Can you discuss living for Christ in a sexless marriage? How do you stay pure when sex in marriage is not possible for a variety of reasons?
Yeah, so this is a very, very common scenario, way more common than people realize, and especially in Christian environments. So just to contextualize this a little bit, you know, Christians get told in youth groups, don't have sex until you're married. And on that wedding night, it's going to be so worth it and it'll be amazing. And sex is a skill. So even that whole thing is a total misnomer. Like when you first have sex, it's not actually, it's great because it's sex. So it can't be bad. As my worship pastor, my old worship pastor famously said, he said, sex is like pizza. Even if it's bad, it's still pizza. So there's some good wisdom there. But the point is, you know, we kind of get promised that once you get married, you have sex and it's so great, you know, and it's so amazing. And that doesn't always happen. And sometimes it doesn't happen because, you know, maybe it's painful for the woman. Maybe there's different expectations. And then sometimes what happens is you just end up in a sexless marriage because maybe the other person doesn't enjoy it. There's tension in the relationship. There's trauma. Very, very common story. In fact, I have a friend of mine who's kind of on the tail end of going through the divorce process. And, you know, it kind of surfaced that part of what he was going through is they've been married for almost a decade and they had sex less than 10 times, you know, that entire decade, just in a sexless marriage. So, so I think there's a lot of, there can be a lot of head trash that sort of comes with this. But the bottom line is we know God designed sex for marriage. And so if you're in a sexless marriage, that is a problem and it needs to be addressed. And I think the ultimate question here is how to stay pure when sex in a marriage is not possible, because we get asked that a lot, right? By clients who are like, well, I watch pornography because my wife's not giving me anything and I have these needs and whatever. And so I'll leave some of that part. Maybe Sean, you can touch on that, but I'll just say, I think the most important thing if you're in a sexless marriage is to keep hope. And I think that's a really difficult thing when you keep trying. And the thing that guys do that where they shoot themselves in the foot is they keep trying the same thing. So it's like, well, you know, I offered here and I gave her a back rub and I thought maybe that would help and, you know, nothing happened. You have to kind of play a very slow game here. And what I mean by that is you have to really learn to connect emotionally. You have to learn to do other things that are non-sexual that can lead to a better sex life. And that's typically where we would start. And this is kind of assuming that everything's good on her side, which, you know, the one friend that I referenced earlier, and this is again, very common, but you do often see that sometimes the woman does have abuse or she has some sort of trauma around sex that is contributing. And if that's the case, it's actually all the more reason for you to be nurturing, to build that emotional connection, to really be compassionate with her, goes a long way. I will just make a stance and then I will pass it over. There is no justification for sexual misbehavior, pornography, and whatever else, even if you're in a sexless marriage. And I know how unfair it is to be in a sexless marriage, especially if maybe you're that story where it's like, we did everything right. We saved ourselves from marriage. Mm-hmm. It's not fair. We're not having it. That sucks, man. And I'm really sorry because I don't think anybody deserves that. That being said, the standard does not change for what's healthy and what's good for you and what's ultimately going to be good for your marriage. So I'll pass over to Sean to give some maybe more nuts and bolts on that. But the standard remains the same. And this is not an easy situation.
Yeah. So Tim, there's this part that says for a variety of reasons. So we don't know what those are. It could be medical, could be emotional, could be whatever else, could be your end, her end. So the first thing that's on my mind is there's a really great book by Sheila Gregoire called The Great Sex Rescue. She handles these sorts of topics better than anyone I've ever seen or heard. she even handles like when women do have like vaginal medical problems. There's actually a lot of it is induced from stress and trauma. So she does such a great job explaining that, what could be done. I've worked with a guy who was in his early 70s and he was struggling with a lot of sexual shame leading to erectile dysfunction. Him and his wife had a challenging sex life because of those things. Your scenario could be very different. I'm not comparing, just giving some examples. But one of the things that was profound for him, and it's been profound for a lot of guys that I've worked with who are having sexual struggles, is developing something that my wife and I went through called a sexual template. And really the basis of that sexual template is to kind of get on the same page on all things. And the first step actually is what's the purpose between both of us in our sex life? Is the purpose of sex to have penetration? If that is your purpose, that's going to be really hard. So maybe it's redefining that. Second step, which is actually the most profound step for me, actually step two and three together, but it's like, what's in the way from you guys connecting sexually, even if it's not penetration? What is in the way? Is it lies? Is it fears? Is it expectations? How do you guys start to talk about those things and speak truth into each other's lies? There's something so powerful about hearing it from the other person's mouth. And then you start to be able to open the floodgates to, what do you want? What do you need? What do you like? What are healthy expectations? What would be beneficial to both of you? And that's kind of what creates a sexual template. And I think that's a great way to honor one another. And it's focused on intimacy, communication, feeling seen, feeling heard, feeling significant. And there's just so much power in that. So that's what I would say. I'm getting a Seinfeld reference right now and I shouldn't be. And I'm not going to say it.
It's already happening. It's already happening.
I just think about George. We just talked for three hours. She has mono.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
I won't go there.
I was actually thinking of a story, and these are some people that I know. They're not really friends per se, but people I know. And she basically has a issue with her anatomy that means she can never have sexual intercourse. And for her partner, that was not a deal breaker. And again, that means no kids, right? At least biologically. And it means that, you know, their sexual experiences are going to be very limited as far as what they can and can't do. But it was actually a beautiful story of, you know, love for one another, agreeing to make it work. And so the reasons weren't provided here. So I don't know if it's something physical. Maybe the wife is shut down emotionally. I think if there's something more like that, you know, what Sean is talking about is still very relevant and still would be really, really valuable. And the other thing, we reference Eddie Capricci here a little bit every now and again. And he's a big fan of sensate exercises, sensate touch, sensate focus. And those can be great ways, but it does require, you know, mutual participation. So those aren't things you can just do on your own. That's where your partner wants to engage, and they're willing to maybe explore other ways to do that. That is kind of just not, it's just not high pressure. It's really a lot more focused on, you know, you guys paying attention to each other's bodies, and it can be really, really productive. And Eddie specifically recommends it to a lot of his clients because pornography does kind of distort your concept of your body and what's healthy and all that kind of stuff. Yeah. So it's there's lots of good options there, but I would say where Sean was talking about with the template, that's definitely the place to start because you can do that on your own, and then depending on how willing or unwilling your wife is to participate, you can then decide kind of what the next course of action is after that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. One more thought actually before we move to the next, which is there's more to life than sex and your sexual needs, even in a marriage context. And so that would be another thing, is if you are in a really dire situation that's beyond your control, whether it's anatomy or probably maybe what'd be more relevant here is where your wife has zero interest in engagement and maybe it's like roommate syndrome in the marriage. If something like that is more the case, then you actually need to find other ways to feel fulfilled in life. And look, before you had sex for the first time, you went how many years finding fulfillment in life without sex? So you're definitely capable of it. It's just that sometimes we believe the lie that we have these sexual needs, and you know, because we have these needs have to get met. And I just don't think that's the right way to look at it. I think actually there's other ways to find fulfillment also. And look, you know, I've been away from Shaloma for, you know, a week, 2 weeks. And again, that's a very micro example. But even in those environments, we're expected to still handle ourselves with integrity and pure conduct. And yeah, the same is true when it's a bit longer term, as difficult as it might be.
Question two is from Sean in India. How do I change my dopamine so that I stop watching these videos? I want to stop.
Okay, how do I change my dopamine? Man, I love it. I love that people are talking about dopamine now, because I was like digging into dopamine like 10 years ago before it was cool. So the biggest misunderstanding about dopamine is people talk about like getting dopamine hits, and that is accurate. You know, our brain does flood with dopamine when we achieve certain things. But the real danger of dopamine is actually in the drip. And that is where we are not achieving the thing, but we're just pursuing it. That's what actually keeps dopamine going. And so the interesting thing is everything in our society today is conditioning us for the dopamine drip. So your phone, notifications on your phone, social media. If you think about the Instagram feed, right? Like you scroll through and what happens when you get to the bottom? You wait for a little spinning wheel and you keep going, right? Or if you're going through stories, you're always going to what's next. All of these things are triggering the dopamine circuits in your system. And so if you're really looking to change the way that your brain is using dopamine and alter it, I would say there's probably three things you need to do. Number one is you want to probably have a period once a week of 24 hours where you are doing a dopamine detox. And this is out of the work of Anna Lemke, who I believe is a Harvard or Yale researcher. Dopamine Nation is the title of her book, and the work she does, very, very good. She recommends a dopamine detox. I think it's 24 hours. The length might be different. But I do that. I do that on Saturdays. And so that's really, really valuable. The second thing I would say is there is a concept in neuroscience called edging, which is you are like if level five is watching porn, where it's like that huge dopamine flood, and a level zero is no dopamine and you're just totally calm and collect. Edging is where you go from a zero to a one, from a one to a two, from a two to a three, where it's like, yeah, I probably should get off this app, but I'm just going to look at a few more. And then something catches your attention and, you know, you go from Instagram to YouTube and now you're watching longer videos and, you know, now you're at a three, but then there's an ad and it kind of triggers you a bit. So you go to a four. And edging is where we kind of push that. And so a lot of guys are oblivious. A lot of guys don't gain their awareness until they're like a level four.
Yeah.
So building that awareness of when am I at a level one, when am I at a level two, that can go a long way, because it kind of becomes a runaway train. Like it's not linear. Like by the time you're at a three, four, five level, very, very hard to stop that train. Like the wheels are already in motion. But if you can start to recognize things at a level one or level two, you can reset your nervous system a lot more quickly. And then again, we're not going to eliminate dopamine. We're wired to have dopamine. We want dopamine. But what happens here is you're just in more control of it and you don't get into that state where you're just starved for dopamine. And I have a third thing, but I'll pass over to Sean first because I know he's got some thoughts.
Yeah, I was just thinking about the 24-hour fast. You know, it's vital. I think when guys are earlier in the stages, I really think guys need to be doing that more often for longer, for it to really do much. Like fasting as a Christian, it's like one day fast, they're nice, they definitely are beneficial, but you're already thinking about eating. Like you're not really focused on the longevity of disciplining your flesh and being without. So I think there's a lot to be said there. I think what we need to do when it comes to dopamine is we need to rewire what we think about as pleasure. We need to rewire what we think about as satisfying, right? Like that's a big part of it, where that would be in the idea of like edging. So for me, it's like if I start scrolling on Facebook, which is very rare, but I do it once in a while, it's like, this isn't satisfying. I've already decided like this isn't satisfying to me. This isn't going to give me pleasure. There's already that trigger in my head. I've already pre-thought this. We've talked about that with that trigger plan. It's like, already decided in my head that this isn't going to give me what I want. What I want is this. Now I have a decision to say, I'm going to keep doing something that's stupid, or I'm going to go do something that actually gives me what I want and need. So that's been a big journey for me as, you know, go through stressful seasons, become a dad, move across the world. There's lots of new triggers and it's very easy to numb, but because these have been habitually developed, like these resolves, these convictions, they've just come with mm-hmm. me. So that would be my main encouragement for you, Sean. Good name. I would just really say that that's a big part of with what Sathya is saying. That's been my journey, is really defining what do I want? What do I like? What do I enjoy? What satisfies me? And begin to create a life that is full of that. Because if you live a life you enjoy, you won't need to escape from it anymore.
Yeah, man, it's so good. You actually mentioned what my third thing was going to be. So that's perfect.
That's good.
But I was going to say, have things in your life that are healthy that you can look forward to. Because dopamine is all about anticipation, yes. right? And so if you have healthy things that you are excited about, that you're anticipating, that's a really good way to actually kind of rewire your brain, or I would say probably like kind of recircuit it so that your dopamine is actually being used positively and in your favor. So that stuff can go a long way.
Yeah, that's really cool. Sathya, are you familiar? I'm not remembering exactly how I read it. It was a few years ago, but the idea of when we anticipate something that's going to be exciting, we get dopamine, but we anticipate something that also has stress with it. It also releases cortisol.
Yeah, that's right.
Which then enhances our tie to being stressed and then going to porn.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a really good point. So you can trigger responses in your body as though it were happening just by imagining something. So yeah, 100%. And that is a little bit more of the indirect correlate that we see for sure in guys who are addicted to pornography, is they're causing the dopamine drip or something worse like cortisol or adrenaline just from the things they're thinking about or anticipating. And then to cope with it, they resort to pornography or something like it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Dopamine, and it releases the chemical that, you know, you want to go do something maybe that's fun or exciting. With cortisol, you want to numb that stressful feeling.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Powerful.
Third question is from James in Tokyo, Japan. I've been watching pornography and masturbation since grade 7. I'm now a high school senior. I've tried to quit many times, and now that I'm about to go into the real world and be on my own, I have to free myself from the grip of the addiction. I've heard a lot about the negative effects like erectile dysfunction and low sperm count, and I'm worried about the future of my own family that I hope to have one day. If I quit now, will I have to worry about these problems? And do they go away upon discontinuing use of porn and masturbation? Also, if there is any one tip that you could give to someone who has tried to quit many times, what would it be?
Wow. Man, such a good question. What I love about this question is that this really is a young guy who's looking ahead and thinking ahead, and then kind of he has the goal, and then he's reverse engineered this and saying, okay, these are the things I need to take care of for me to have that goal, which is, you know, to have a family. So just incredible foresight, James. Well done, man. That's really, really impressive. So the really cool thing, and this has actually been proven for a very long time, like 10, 12 years, this was clinically and academically proven, which is that the physical and mental impacts of pornography can be reversed. So there's really good news, and it doesn't matter if you're 17 or you're 77, your brain and your body are adaptable. And sure, they're a little bit less adaptable, you know, as you go further on in life. But, you know, we've seen guys successfully quit porn and they get their sex lives back in their, you know, 60s and 70s, where the sex life maybe would be dwindling ordinarily. So, you know, with you being so young, I don't think you have a lot to worry about. I think by the time you're ready to have a family, if you make an earnest effort and you successfully quit pornography now or in the near future, I don't think you'll have anything to worry about by the time you reach that stage. And even if you do, and Sean's got a great story around this, but even if you do encounter that, you're going to be way better equipped to actually handle them as they come. So in other words, if you quit porn next year and or in the next year and you do it the right way, you get to the roots and you get equipped with the right tools and resources, and maybe you integrate some inner child work or something else that's going to help you tackle trauma and childhood stuff. When you get married, if you do find out that you're having some performance issues or that you're maybe experiencing some infertility, you're going to be able to make adjustments with a lot more stability, a clearer mind. Mm-hmm. And some of those tools that you learned are probably going to become helpful again. So the best thing you can do, as you suggested, it sounds like you're thinking about it, is, you just quit now. Now's your chance to do it. Now's your time to do it. And even if you do encounter those things later, you'll be better prepared for it. However, by quitting now, you're going to reduce the chances of those things dramatically.
Really good. Yeah, it's a question that would be near and dear to my heart. Since you're in Japan, I don't know if you, it says you're on the air base. Don't know if you're from Japan, but this question coming from Japan is quite unique as well. If you are Japanese, given what's going on in that world over there, pretty scary in the young generation. But what I will say is my story is sobriety for, let's say, I think it was, let's just say 3 years, sobriety, levels of freedom, but was still struggling with the psychological side of erectile dysfunction. Eddie Capirucci, we've mentioned him quite a few times in the last few episodes, inner child go-to guy for writing books and authoring. He was starting to see that a lot of guys that would get free from porn, they just kind of sucked at relationships. Like they would just not go into their marriage feeling ready to handle other areas. They quit porn, but they weren't really emotionally intelligent. They weren't emotionally fit. They weren't able to set boundaries and handle conflict in a way that their wife maybe needed or for them to thrive as a couple. So this is important because the recovery that I did in the first 3 years of my journey, there were some good elements to it. There was some depth to it with some trauma and whatnot, but there wasn't a lot of great healing of that trauma. There was definitely some states that I was still immature in areas. I still struggled with safety around my wife. And it was actually because I never dealt with the mother trauma. It was only a father trauma. So what I'm saying is that if I can give you one tip, it would be, as we've been saying over and over again, get to the real depth of the roots. Look at your father, look at your mother, look at those influences. If you're going to get married one day, your mother is going to have a huge effect on how you relate to your wife, feel safe with her, communicate with her. So if you're struggling with erectile dysfunction, even if you quit porn or you're struggling to feel safe around a woman, it really tells us a lot about how our mother handled her own marriage, how she was maybe an anxious presence. Maybe she had depression. That's my story. So it just gives us a lot of insight. So my main tip for you would be to look at the signs of what's going on around you and use that as a way to say, wow, there's something to explore and heal further. Yeah. So there's a lot of hope. Once I learned all this stuff, the turnaround was actually really quick. And that was really exciting. And, that was 3.5 years ago, I think that was. And it's just been so cool to not only have a thriving marriage and sex life with my wife, but to be able to share on these topics because what I have learned works for other people too. So I actually created like a mini course for it and everything. So what I'm telling you isn't just my opinion. It's proven with lots of guys ages, 20 to 80. So very, very cool stuff.
Yeah. I mean, James, you are on the right track. If you're thinking this way, asking these questions, definitely doing the right work, man. So, so make sure you check out some of our resources too. There's some freebies on there that'll give you a good kind of guide work for getting to the roots of the issue. Like the book, The Last Relapse, you can get that, on our site. All that kind of stuff could be a really good way for you to start. And then, as you kind of figure out what it is you want specifically, then, you can get some specific help and enter freedom, hopefully quickly, and then certainly into marriage and fatherhood without any pornography. So well done, man. Mm-hmm. Fantastic question. Hey, if you're enjoying these episodes, make sure you're sharing them with people that you think would benefit from them. That's how we know you guys are enjoying what we're doing here. And a rating or review on your platform goes a really long way. In the meantime, God bless you guys. Thank you so much for listening. Stay clean. We'll talk soon.
Hey, everybody. It's Thea again. Thanks for listening to Unleash the Man Within. I wanted to take a quick moment to let you know about a free ebook that I wrote for you called The Ultimate Guide to Porn Recovery. It provides a basic framework for the recovery process and a few of my top tips completely free of charge. You can get it now at www.ultimaterecoveryguide.com. ultimaterecoveryguide.com. That's www.ultimaterecoveryguide.com. Now, if you've been impacted by the podcast and you want to show some support in less than 60 seconds, there are three ways you can do that. First, you can leave a rating or review on your podcast platform. This lets people like you know that the content here is valuable. Secondly, you can share this episode with someone in your life that might benefit from the content. If you're passionate about helping other people experience freedom and success in their lives, this is one of the easiest ways to do that. And lastly, you can subscribe. I personally only listen to the podcast that I subscribe to. If you're seeking daily encouragement, guidance, and insight in your recovery journey, I highly recommend subscribing to Unleash the Man Within. Thanks for listening. I look forward to connecting with you very, very soon.
The information, opinions, and recommendations presented in this podcast by Sathya Sam and his guests are for general information only and should not be considered medical, clinical, or any other form of professional advice. Any reliance on the information provided is done at your own risk.